This is the Bible Show. Welcome, folks, to another episode of the Bible Show. My name is Sam Kasten Smith. Joining me is Will, and we are jumping into Genesis chapter 21 today. This is where the promise finally comes.
Finally.
We have been reading the story of Abraham all the way since Genesis chapter 12, where God promises that through Abraham's descendant, all the nations of the world are going to be blessed. The line of salvation is going to come from him. And from Genesis 12, it's been this long waiting game of faith and trial and struggle and bumps and bruises all along the way, where Abraham is really wondering, like, what does this mean? Mm-hmm. How are you going to make good on this? When are you going to make good on this? And well, today, Genesis 21, the line of salvation God brings about through Isaac, born to Sarah. And just to give, because there's such a sharp contrast when you get into Genesis 21 versus the last week. And if you remember last week, like, this is, it's one of those chapters when we finished last week where it's like, you know, someday I'm going to have to meet Abram. And like, if for some reason, somehow he's ever heard us talk about him, which probably not, but whatever, like, he's going to be like, you guys were kind of harsh. Yeah. Or maybe not, I don't know. But it's like, last week was a bad lap for Abraham.
Yeah.
Where you could tell his faith was shaken. He's not sure about what to do with the Lord anymore. Like, you know, he's using language that seems like his faith is shaken. He's doing questionable things. And then all of a sudden, God comes through on the promise. And in this chapter, it's like you see Abram and Sarah all in. And their attitude toward the Lord is just effusive with praise. And it's a much different chapter now that the son of promise has been born.
Yeah. It's all kind of exciting. You know, just like finally we've got a good news story in this Genesis.
Yeah, right. we've been going through like Sodom and Lot and his daughters, and then last week with Abraham stumbles, and so today we get some good news.
Yeah,
this is cool. Good. All right, we're good. And we get to see what God is going to do with Hagar and Ishmael as well, which that has some rough parts, but it's really beautiful, actually, what he is accomplishing. But let's start at verse 1. The Lord visited Sarah as he had said, right? So Abraham has prayed for Abimelech. He's prayed for God to cure the barrenness of Gerar. God has done that. And after Abram prayed for these Gentiles in this city, now God's like, boom, here's life for you, which is fascinating that that's the way he chooses to operate. But the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he promised. And Sarah conceived and bore Abram a son in his old age at the time of which God had spoken to him. You remember when during the year this is? God had promised, I'm coming back at this point next year, but the Hebrew there literally is the time of reviving. So it's like spring.
Yeah.
Everything's coming to life all around them. And this is exactly when she gives birth. Abram called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac. You notice how it repeats that? Like, whom Sarah.
Like, let's be clear. It's Sarah, Sarah, Sarah.
Like, God did what he said he was going to do. Sarah bore the son, Isaac, which is important. What does that name mean? Because God has already told them a year ago, you're going to call this kid Isaac. Why?
Laughter.
Laughter. So when God comes to Abraham in Genesis 17, it says, no, it's not going to be Ishmael. It is going to be Isaac, and it's going to be through Sarah. What does he do?
He laughs.
He falls down, R-O-F-L. Like, he falls down. I know.
Oh, that was gross.
I know, millennial.
Keep that in, editors.
You died a million deaths right there.
Don't let him dodge that. He deserves all the comments. And please comment as much as possible, everybody.
You really don't need to. You just comment mocking the millennial sensibilities. It's like, anyway, moving right along. So he falls on his face laughing at God. The next chapter, when God comes and says, no, it's going to be Sarah, and she's overhearing him, what does she do?
She laughs.
She laughs to herself, right? But God's like, why are you laughing?
God hears that.
When you have the kid, you're going to name him Laughter, except this time it's not going to be the laughter that comes in mocking or, you know, like, God, yeah, right. It's going to be celebratory laughter. You ever watch a movie, by the way, and like the victory comes along. Have you ever laughed out of like sheer joy and exhilaration of a victory of some sort? Like you just like, this is just awesome.
It's almost like when you laugh at a good thing, it's like just a release.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the pressure valve has been
so good. It's like the same thing, like tears of joy. There's a laughter of joy. Those are good laughs. Anyway, Isaac comes. This is triumphant. This is pure joy. This is God's goodness. He's vindicated all those years of waiting. And Abram circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old. So now, last chapter, what is Abraham doing? It's like all the things, he's wavering. What do you notice this one?
He's back on.
We're going to name him Isaac just like God told us. We're going to circumcise Isaac just like he told us on the day that he told us, as God had commanded him. And it's like now all of a sudden, Abram is all in. He believes. You know, it's like it's the movie The Matrix, like when Neo finally is willing to fight the machines or whatever, and they're like, what's he doing? And what does Morpheus say? He's beginning to believe. Like, sorry, you can mock me for that one in the comments too.
Keep going.
You know that movie, right?
Vaguely.
Are you serious?
No, but I did watch Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
What? It was good. I mean, a little sad. I mean, no need for it to be so sad at the end.
I get this text from Will. He's like, I just finished this movie. This is so sad.
I just didn't need
so sad. Why does Jenny have to die?
Doing so well.
Well, welcome.
So I'll watch The Matrix next.
Good movie. Yeah.
We'll keep going.
Are you for real? You've never watched The Matrix?
The Matrix hit at a time that was weird. Like, you wouldn't have shown that to me as a child.
I guess maybe.
I was probably like 10 when it came out.
Okay. Watch it. The symbolism of Christianity throughout that, all over the place. Like Trinity, Neo, even the ship they're in, Nebuchadnezzar,
the chosen one,
figure, the chosen one, and he's bringing people out of the slavery. So we're way off of target here, but we need to get Will caught up in the classics of cinema. But anyway, Abram's all in. He's beginning to genuinely believe in his bones, and it's like the Lord is setting up the next chapter where he's going to ask him the most impossible thing. And you see Abram's faith has become unshakable because of all the trials and seeing God come through in all of them. But he circumcises his son as God had commanded him. Abram was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Mm. Like, you think of her life. Think of all the things that she's been through in this. And her failures and her shame and her guilt and her missteps. And, you know, she's going to be unlikable to a lot of people here in a minute again. Like, for the first time, this is her being like, God has made laughter for me. Like, he's rescued me from Pharaoh's harem. He's rescued me from Abimelech's harem. He's had to intervene to watch over me a million times. But this is the first time where me and my husband together are getting what we've been longing for 90 years in her case. 90 years. And now she's laughing, and it came from the hand of God, and she's over the moon about it. And she says, everyone who hears will laugh over me. Like, I've been the isolated one, the outcast, the one that people look at and be like, oh, something must be wrong with her. She doesn't have kids. Da, 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 da. For the first time, she's laughing, and now everyone's going to laugh with her. Like, she's going to have community in this. She feels God's favor. It's a big deal for her. Like, I just try to enter into all that pain being relieved. Big deal. God is so kind to her in this moment. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I've borne him a son in his old age. So you see, their marriage gets redeemed. Her hopes get redeemed. All his relationship with God, her relationship with God, all of this is coming to be redeemed. And their faith and their character and everything that you're going to see in them is stronger because of the messy road that's behind them. They see God faithful in spite of the messy road, in spite of all their failures. He's still pressed in and brought them this joy. And they're radically different people with each other. And now it says, as the child grew, verse 8, as the child grew and was weaned. So, you know, she's caring for him. Now he's old enough to where, you know, toddler walking around. He's starting to get old enough to communicate and smile in simple sentences, maybe. And Abram made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. This is a big deal. New stage of life. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, laughing. So let's stop here for a moment, because this is a big deal. Sarah looks over, now you're getting to this point where, you know, Isaac can go around. You're not always carrying him around to where he's constantly protected, right? Yeah. Like a baby you're always with. But a weaned child is starting to crawl and move and walk and to do all these things. And so he's got a little bit more independence. And now Sarah's looking and sees Ishmael, and he's laughing at Isaac. And that word there, again, laughter is a huge word in the Hebrew of all this story. You see it again and again. But the laughter here, you remember when in the story of Sodom, that they go to the sons-in-law and they're like, you need to come out with us. Like, please, the city's going to be destroyed. And they laughed like it's a laugh of scorn, yeah, of like mockery, like you're an idiot.
It's not like someone just told a joke.
Yeah. So that's what this is. It's not like Ishmael's like, ha ha, Isaac, you're so cute and funny. You make me laugh. Ha ha ha. Good to see you, little half brother. Like, that's not what's going on here. It's a sneering. It's a you. Like, a mocking, right?
And the age gap is what?
Age gap. So, Ishmael, remember, he's circumcised at 13, I think it says. And God says, in a year, I'm going to bring about a child. So, then he's 14, and now he's being weaned at a year or two.
So, Ishmael's a man at that standard.
Yeah, he's 16. And here's little toddler Isaac, and Ishmael's already like... Like hatred.
Yeah, so any jeering would be obviously like, oh, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, this is not good. And notice the desire to this point before the sneering, there's no like, hey, get him out of here, get them out of here. There's mm-hmm. nothing like that. But the sneering causes Sarah to be like, no. And so you get to one of the most jarring parts of this chapter.
And that's on brand. I mean, Ishmael's going to be a wild donkey of a man. You're not wondering like, hey, yep, is he going to be kind to my child?
And that's where we got to give Sarah a little bit of a break, because without that context, right, and you just read verse 10, you have Sarah saying to Abraham, cast out this slave woman with her son, for the slave of this woman shall not be heir with my son Isaac. And you're like, gross. Like, because Sarah has some moments in her life where she's gross, you know, mm-hmm. may God judge you, Abraham, or mistreating Hagar to where she runs off into the wilderness and is willing to risk her life because she's being treated so harshly. And you're like, gross, Sarah, like, what's wrong with you? And here she's like, get her out of here. Like, they have to go. And you're like, there she is again. Like, I'm not sure I like that. But now pause for a moment and let's go back to what we heard in Genesis 16, was it? Where Hagar runs off into the wilderness and God meets her as the angel of the Lord and says, no, go back. I'm going to watch over you. I'm going to make him a great nation. I'm going to watch over you and your son. But then he says, he's going to be a wild donkey of a man. Now remember, that's a literal thing, like a territorial. He's not going to share a territory with anybody. And it says his hand will be against what?
Everyone.
Everyone and his brothers. So the prophecy, when she comes back, if she relays that to Abraham and Sarah, it's like, hey, his hand, his violence is going to be against everyone around him. He will not share at all, and he's going to be violent toward his brothers. So now you hear Sarah, who's like, oh, my sweet boy, and you've got a 16-year-old who's like starting to already show that that's exactly what he's going to be. And you're like, all right, the entire inheritance, all the promise, he's got every motive in the world to wipe out my son, to kill my son. I don't trust him. The prophecy is that he's not going to share. So this idea that we're going to raise him in a home and ignore what God said about him, and we're just going to hope that it goes well with them sharing, I don't want it. Get him out of here. And if you're Sarah, and the salvation of the world and 90 years of your hopes and dreams waiting for this child to be born, get him out of here.
Yeah, it's wisdom in a sense.
But it's harsh. Yeah. It feels harsh.
And you know your husband already is tempted to think of Ishmael as like, oh, let's just share these portions. You know, hey, I have two sons now, so let's just split it down the middle.
Yeah, that's right. So he showed, you go back, Abraham loves this kid.
Yeah.
Like, remember, he advocated, no, let it come through Ishmael. Can he be the one that's blessed, right? So it's not like Abraham's like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, like.
But yet, even now, that obedience to God, the recognition that the promise is more important than anything else, hits Abraham. And listen to what happens. She said to Abraham, cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of the slave woman will not be an heir with my son. Why? Because he will not share. He will be violent. And we can't endanger Isaac, and that's not the plan. And so the thing was very displeasing to Abraham on account of his son. Like, Abraham in two chapters is going to be asked to give up two sons.
Yes.
Pretty wild, right? For a guy that's been struggling with fertility issues and wanting a son, he gets Ishmael, and here he's going to be asked to give him up in the next chapter.
Yeah, his backup plan here.
More wild, he's going to be asked to give up Isaac. So it's displeasing. He loves this kid. But God said to Abraham, so God's on Team Sarah here. Be not displeased because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, you do as she tells you, for through Isaac your offspring shall be named, and I will make a nation of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your offspring. So what does God say? And I want you to hear this, because it's important. God's not just like, send him away. Like, let him go out into the wilderness and die. God's like,
no, you can send him away, because I'm going to take care of them.
I'm going to be his dad. I will watch over him. I'm going to make sure that he's taken care of. I'm going to make sure that Hagar's taken care of. Trust me, I'm going to make a great nation to them, because it's what I promised Hagar chapters ago. It's okay. It's okay. This is good for the promise. You can trust them to me. And so the first time Abram's asked to entrust one of his sons to the Lord is this chapter. Heartbreaking. And here you see a radically different Abraham than you did a chapter ago, where God says, give up a son that you love, trust me with him. And Abram's like, okay, I will. Like, wow, this guy's faith is radically different than it was a chapter ago. And now notice the language that goes on here. And I want you, like, if you look at it, compare it, we're kind of stealing into next week. But if you compare this next part with what you find in Genesis 22, the echoes are undeniable. So Abram rose early in the morning. What's he going to do in the next chapter with Isaac?
Rise
he's asked to give Isaac. He's going to rise early in the morning. So just have that in mind. I'm not going to go verse by verse, because we'll get to next chapter next week. But it says, Abram rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave it to Hagar, and putting on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. So she's going south into a desert. You go to Beersheba, and it's like,
it's desolate.
It's desolate. Like, death is going to get you. If you don't have a caravan, if you're not well supplied, if you don't know where the wells are, you are going to die out there.
Yeah, so one skin of water is not looking good.
That's correct. And so verse 15, when the water and the skin was gone, she put the child under one of the bushes. Then she went and sat down opposite him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot. For she said, let me not look upon the death of the child. So she's convinced, like, it's over for us. We're forsaken. We're out here about to die. She's been there before. What happened the last time when she'd gone out into the wilderness?
God showed up.
The angel of the Lord chased her down and said, Like, you belong to me. I hear you. I see you. She says that to him. You see me. You hear me. But this time she's convinced that she's out. She's convinced that death is coming. So she takes her son, who now, remember, he's 16, right? It's not like he's a little baby. But he's so weakened from the journey that she sets him down, right? And leaves him there and walks away. And he's either too weak, too dehydrated, whatever the case might be, but he stays underneath this bush, and she goes out into the sun, into the scorching sun, because she does not want to watch the moment that he dies. And as she sat opposite him, she lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the boy, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And the angel, so she has taught him to call on who?
God.
Interesting. Right?
Yes.
So God hears the voice of Ishmael, and the angel of God called to Hagar. So he speaks to her again from heaven and said to her, what troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Up, lift up the boy, and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make him into a great nation. And then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. So it's like, it's been there the whole time, but she couldn't see it. Maybe he just created it for her. Like, we don't know how that comes about. But in a moment, like, God is training this boy along with her I'm going to make good on my promise. Like, it's kind of interesting. Like, what do you do with Ishmael at this point? Like, God is hearing him. God is responding to him. God's responding to her again. He's promising the great nation. All this stuff is going on. He's providing the well of water. He's preserving the life. But now hear the story in light of what we're going to do next chapter. Abraham rises up early in the morning, is willing to give up his son. They go on a distant journey. She gets to the point where there's about to be a death, and who shows up? The angel of God shows up and says, whoa, 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 there's no death here. There's no death that's coming to the son of Abraham. And here, this is, I'm going to show you something that's going to remedy this. What's that? In the next chapter, right? Like, Abraham's like, oh, death is for certain coming on Isaac. And who shows up? Oh, the angel of the Lord. There he is again. And there's a ram that they just so happened to miss over in the thicket. And it's like, God is doing all the things that he's going to do for Isaac in the next chapter to Ishmael in this chapter. He intervenes to spare the son of Abraham, even the one who's not the son of promise, even the one who doesn't bring about salvation. God is still showing mercy for the sake of Abraham and for the sake of Hagar to this boy, which is just phenomenal. And so he makes a way for life. And so she went, filled the skin with water, and gave the boy a drink, and God was with that boy, and he grew up. And he lived in the wilderness, and he became an expert with a bow, and he was a wild donkey of a man, you know, like, and he's territorial, and he is going to have a whole bunch of sons, and they're going to 12 sons and princes of nations. And sure enough, a great nation comes forward, and he lived in the wilderness of Paran to the south, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. So that doesn't bode well, you know, like. How do they stay in the faith? Like, are we going to see them in heaven? Like,
yeah.
those are questions that are out there. What we do know is that God cared for them. At least
he spared
God
heard them, at least.
Spared them, showed mercy on the son
provided
of Abraham.
For them.
And so it's just fascinating the goodness of God in all this to care for them and to make good on his word. Right, so one of the other things about this that I think is really fascinating, and I might tell the story because I think it's applicable for us. In the story of Elijah, so Abraham's living, you know, he's about 2000 BC. And Elijah comes and he's more than 1,000 years later, probably 1,100, 1,200 years after Abraham comes Elijah. And Elijah is this faithful prophet, right? He's like the only prophet in Israel that's still calling the nation to turn to God, or at least he thinks so. He's the only one publicly doing it. He's calling a wicked king Ahab and a wicked king queen Jezebel. And they're like, they've got all these prophets of Baal. They've turned away from the Lord, prophets of Asherah. And Elijah is called to bring, like to preach a message that brings the nation back to God, but the nation's just thoroughly wicked, right? And so they have this great contest on Mount Carmel. You remember that in story where Elijah goes up against all the prophets of Baal and Asherah. And it's like, whoever's the real God, you know, they'll consume this offering from the heavens. And then the nation, like, serve whoever the real God is. And Elijah and the Lord are victorious there. All these false prophets are shamed. All the nation is like, oh, Yahweh really is the Lord. And then Elijah's thinking, like, finally, like, we have victory. Revival's on the way. And then what does Jezebel say?
You're going to be dead in 24 hours.
I'm coming for you still. The battle's not over. I'm going to kill you. And then you get this bold prophet, Elijah, one of the most zealous prophets that you find in the whole Bible. And how does he respond to that threat?
Despondent.
He crumbles. It's one of the strangest things. You see this guy who's faithful again and for years during droughts and battles and threats and everything else. And he finally has the victory. And you can almost feel like he's run a marathon and he's just finally like, oh, yes, finally the victory.
Like, I did it.
And she's like, nope, not over. I'm coming for you. And he's like, I can't do this anymore. I'm so worn out. And we're told that Elijah, rather than staying in the middle of the battle, because Israel's to the north, Samaria, where their palace was, way up to the north, north of Jerusalem, he beelines it south, and he goes down, and he's in Beersheba, this very place, and what does it say? He goes under a tree, a broom tree, and he says, I'm no better than any of my fathers, and he says, basically, I want to die.
Yeah.
Why do you think God ordains that? Why do you think Elijah goes and sits under a tree in Beersheba and says, I'm no better than anyone who's come before me. I want to die. Who's the only other person in Scripture who's experienced that?
Our boy Ishmael.
Ishmael. You know what Elijah's saying at that moment? Like, clearly, my efforts are no good. God's not showing up. Like, I must not be chosen. I'm not Isaac.
I'm not the prophet of promise, yeah.
I must be Ishmael. And so God's clearly not with me. And he goes and sits under this broom tree. And the same compassion that God shows to Ishmael, he's going to show to Elijah. Because you remember how that story goes? It's a great one for anybody who's ever experienced spiritual burnout. So powerful and profound to me when I've been in seasons of exhaustion and darkness. God comes to Elijah in that moment and doesn't say, hey, what are you doing? You're my prophet. Like, get up, go back to battle, go back to the north, go confront Ahab and Jezebel. God comes to him and says, you need sleep.
Yeah.
Here's a meal. Take a nap.
Wake a snack and a nap.
Yeah, right. Sometimes you need a snack and a nap.
I say that like once a month. I take that passage very literally where you just need a snack and a nap.
I need a nap and less snacks probably, but anyway. But anyway, God gives him a snack and a nap and says, you know, sleep some more, like you don't have the energy. And then when he wakes him up, rather than taking him back to the north, back into the middle of the battle, you know what he does? He takes him south. And you know where he's taking him? He takes him to Mount Sinai. Who else was on Mount Sinai?
Moses.
And God's like telling Elijah, like, you feel like you're out? You feel like you're not one of my great ones? I'm taking you to Mount Sinai, and I'm going to talk to you there just like I talked with Moses. Hmm. Because you're that guy in my mind, Elijah. You're one of the greats. And yet, Elijah feels like he's got to be a failed prophet because there's no fruit. Like, yeah, God was victorious, but nobody's coming. Ministry seems dead and barren. Like, who are there any other prophets? Like, he has it out with God on Mount Sinai. And God comes and speaks to him in the still small voice. And he's so compassionate, and he builds him up, and he gives him assurances. And he says, I'm not done with you. Mm. And there's something about the heart of God toward Elijah. And I think the stories are similar because in both of them, it feels like there's a failure. Like, God, do you even love us? Like, is it all over with? And in both cases, God hears, God shows up, God shows compassion, God rescues, because God's not done with your story. And God wants you to rest. Take a break.
Yeah.
Just come be with me. Stop the battle. Take a moment and just come be with me and get reoriented. Because unless you're doing that anyway, you're going to be no good to anybody.
Yeah, you're out.
If you're not taking care of this, if you're not receiving the love from God, you're not overflowing with the love of God, and you're just trying to force everything, right? And I love that that's the message here, both for Ishmael. God's not forsaking them. God's compassionate. He sees them. He hears them just like he heard her the first time. And so as much as we're like, ouch, like send her away, now God's compassionate, and he is accomplishing his purposes both for Isaac and the future people of Israel, and as well for Ishmael and Hagar and the tribes that will come from him.
Yeah, it's a messy, complex situation. I didn't expect the ending to be simple all of a sudden. Like,
yeah.
It was complex when it happened. It's complex to disengage all of that as well.
Yeah, yeah. And it does make you realize that, like, God's value on you is not what you produce.
Yes.
You follow? Like when Elijah's having that moment, for instance, which is why I love this moment, when he's under that broom tree where Ishmael was, in the same region anyway, God's not like, hey, you're only valuable for me when you're serving me.
Yeah.
So get back to serving
you're
me.
You're on the clock.
Like God says, whoa, 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 stop. Take a break. We're going to go south. We're going away from the action. I need you to just be quiet and with me. That's where I'm going to do big things in you and through you. And that's where we have to, it's like the reason why God gives us the Sabbath. He wants us to rest with him, to be with him, because he loves our devotion more than our deeds and our worship more than our works and our heart more than our hands. Like that is where we have to start. And that's, I think, the message of the Elijah thing. But Elijah's for certain, I think, saying, I'm an Ishmael.
It's interesting.
And you see how God responds. It's cool. Anyway, so then it's like this radical left turn in verse 22 where it's like, why in the world is this story in the Bible?
Yeah, this is one where you kind of want to, like, you think about, like, okay, so Moses wrote Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the editorial process happened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how, you know, how the Spirit used all these stories. I don't know if he saw, you know, if he got the real full download of Abraham's life. And, like, we see, like, 10 years are going to pass or whatever after this paragraph to the next chapter. And it's like, okay, I don't know why he chose what he did.
Yeah.
But Moses chose this,
mm-hmm.
or God chose it and gave it to Moses. But somehow somebody chose to put this weird treaty in between the two greatest parts of Abraham's life, the birth of Isaac and the presumed sacrifice of Isaac. And you're just like, this feels like a weird timeout.
Yeah. Like, it really does. Like, left turn, like, the record scratching. Like, why are we talking about this right now? And it's bickering and feuding over a well, and you're like, all right, there has to be a reason for this, so we're going to try. Verse 22, so all of that has happened. At that time, Abimelech and Phicol, so remember Abimelech, we saw this guy in Genesis 20.
Gerar.
King of Gerar, right? So he's there, and however you want to pronounce it.
Phicol.
We'll go with Phicol. I like that.
Phicol just confused me. I'll be thinking you're calling somebody Phicol this whole time.
Phicol. All right. Phicol sounds more impressive. He sounds like
a commander of an army.
All right. So Phicol, the commander of his army, said to Abraham, God is with you in all that you do. So this is evangelistic, actually. You remember when in the calling, he says, those who bless you, I will bless. Those who curse you, I will curse. Going back to Genesis 12, a promise God made to Abraham. And now you see Abimelech, who's like, man, like, no matter what you do, God just keeps blessing you. Like, good and bad. Like, he just will not let go of you. His favor's all over you. God's with you in everything you do.
Yeah, he's like, I had to give you 1,000 pieces of silver when you messed up.
That's right, yeah. Man, this God really loves you and watches over you. So then he says, he's like, all right, like, maybe he had heard about that promise in Genesis 12 where it's like, those who bless you, I will bless. And he's like, hey, I went in on that action. So now, therefore, swear to me here by God, right? So he's recognizing God's authority over creation. Swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me again, or my descendants, or with my posterity, those who come after me. But as I have dealt kindly with you, so you will deal with me and with the land where you have sojourned. And Abram's like, I will swear. And so here you get, you know, Abimelech, if you remember Genesis 20 last week, he's like the good guy. He's the one concerned for Sarah.
Yeah, we like this guy.
He's got integrity of heart. He's doing all that. And he wants in on the blessings that God is giving Abraham, right? Like, if this God loves you that much, like, I want to be an ally to you so that I get the blessings of God, which... Like, how do we get the blessings of God? It's not based on who we are. It's who we ally ourselves to, right? I get the blessings of God purely because...
Jesus.
What? Jesus. Yeah? And in this case, there's like this transference where you are a friend of God by being friends with his covenant people, right? And so when Abram reproved Abimelech about a well of water, so they do all that, they're friends, yeah, we've got a covenant together, but then Abram's like, whoa, your guys just came and took one of my wells. And by the way, does Abraham own any of this land?
No.
No, we're told that he's sojourning there, right? Which means he's been given permission by the king of Gerar, whichever, I don't know how we're pronouncing that one. But he's been given permission to be there, but he's dug a well. He was responsible for it. He's like, hey, your guys. He reproved Abimelech about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized. And Abimelech said, I don't know who's done this thing. You didn't tell me. I've not heard of it until today.
Classic Abimelech.
Right? Like,
stuck in a bad situation.
Totally unaware, like with Sarah. Like, I had no idea that she was your wife. I had no idea any of this was happening. You're coming to me all upset. Like, I don't know anything. So Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech. Now it's reversing, right? Remember the last chapter, who was getting all the wealth?
Abraham.
Abraham from Abimelech. Now you have Abraham giving sheep and oxen to Abimelech, and the two men made a covenant. So this is what I think is going on here. We've talked about this before in Genesis 15. When it says the two men made a covenant, what's the literal Hebrew saying there?
They cut a covenant.
The two men cut a covenant. So why do you think Abraham's given him all these animals? Because we're about to slaughter them and walk between them, at least some of them. And so the two men cut a covenant. And so this is what I think is going on here as we develop this story, is what it's saying is, okay, Abraham, now your faith is solid. You've been wavering from Genesis 12 all the way through Genesis 20, which was probably the low point of your faith. But now that you've seen my faithfulness, you're obedient. You're quickly obedient. You're doing things right again. You're on your game. Your faith is solid because you've seen me stay faithful through the hard seasons. And I cut a covenant with you. You remember? I, God, cut a covenant with you, and we entered into a relationship. And now what is Abraham doing? I'm going to enter into covenants with my neighbors, with pagan neighbors that are coming to the Lord. Like now, I'm going to covenant with people around me the way that God has covenanted with me, right? Mm-hmm. Life and death. Like, I will lay down my life for this covenant with you is the idea when you cut a covenant in the ancient world. And so what do you make of that? Like, that speaks to what we would call in seminary, like ecclesiology, like you belong to a covenant group of people, but why do you do that? God has covenanted with us, and therefore we covenant with each other. The vertical covenant comes that impacts the horizontal covenants we make with our neighbors. And why do I love you? Because he first loved me. Why do I do anything? Why do I show you mercy? Because he showed me mercy. Why do I value truth? Because he's a God of truth. So all of that, I think, is what's going on here. And it's saying, now that Abraham, now that you've got your head on straight and you're on mission, now you're entering into covenants horizontally. Like, I might be reading into that wrong, but that's where my brain goes. Like, I think that's what God is showing us. Like, because the covenant's not just for Abraham to where he goes, oh, nice, God is blessing me. It's like, okay, now that covenant now has implications on how you interact with others.
Yeah, to be a blessing.
And what does Abraham do? Well, this is what God did with me, so I'm going to do it with you, right? And it's over to be a blessing, right? And it's over this well of water, which I think's interesting as well, you know, the source of life. So Abram took sheep and oxen, gave them to Abimelech. The two men made a covenant, cut a covenant, and Abram set seven ewe lambs of the flock apart. And Abimelech said to Abram, they're the ones that... And Abimelech said to Abram, what is the meaning of these seven ewe lambs that you've set apart? And he said, these seven ewe lambs you will take from my hand, that this may be a witness for me that I dug this well. So if the seven ewe lambs aren't part of the cutting of the covenant, they're going to be around. You're going to see them all the
reminder,
time.
Yeah, like
that we agreed when you got these things.
It's my well.
That's my well, right? You're not going to starve or dehydrate my animals, my flocks. Like, this is a reminder. And so, therefore, that place was called Beersheba. Now, what does Beersheba mean? It means well, it can mean well of seven or well of the oath. I think it's probably well of the oath. Because it's like, okay, here's where God, or here's where Abraham entered into this covenant.
Yes.
Because they're both of them swore an oath. There it is. So they made a covenant at Beersheba. Then Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, rose up and returned to the land of the Philistines. Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba and called there on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. So what's interesting is when he was up at Hebron, near the trees of Mamre, where he kept getting the promise and he built the altar of the Lord and all that stuff, like, now he's got a new place that's further south, but now he is establishing that place for the Lord. And he builds an altar there, and he's calling on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And it's like he is spreading what the Lord's claim is in the land and entering into covenants where God will bless the people that he blesses and enter into arrangements where they see, wow, God blesses you in everything you do. I want in on that. And so you see, like, this is evangelistic, I think, and how this is going on, even through the conflict and the tensions and everything else, Abraham's showing, like, I'm a fair person. I'm a generous person. You want me as your neighbor. We're going to enter into terms where we bless each other. And it says, and Abraham sojourned many days in the land of the Philistines, unharmed, seen as a neighbor.
And it seems like his faith is back.
Yeah.
Because again, the two things are like, okay, he's trusting the everlasting God and he's not trying to figure out his earthly means because he just wants to sojourn again.
Mm-hmm.
He's okay with, you know, all of these guys maintaining their land, even though it's the eventual promised land that he has every right to have.
Mm-hmm.
He's back to being like, no, God has called me to be a sojourner. I'm not building a city, but I believe that the everlasting God matters more than
that's right.
Arguing about all of these things, material things of this earth.
And that you see the shift in his loyalties, like from last chapter where he's like, I will endanger the womb that is to be the promise of salvation to the world by giving her over to Abimelech and God rescues her. Now he's all team Isaac. He's all in. He's all worship. Everywhere he goes, he's wanting to build, you know, the altars. He's wanting to follow the law. I'm going to circumcise on the eighth day. I'm going to call his name this. And I like everything that you read about in chapter 21, you're like, oh, we made it through a chapter without Abraham, us having to explain away how he screwed up somehow. Like, he's a changed guy. And what changed him? I think at his lowest point of faith, which was Genesis 20, where he's true, I think he's truly struggling massively in Genesis 20. It's when he's at his lowest that God comes and shows his faithfulness and says, you're my prophet. Mm. I'm not walking away from you. My calling is not coming away from you. Now pray for others and I'm going to restore you. And he sees God breathe life and fertility to the city of Gerar. He sees God breathe life and fertility to Sarah, and he gets everything he's ever wanted, and now he's on cloud nine.
Yeah.
That's the same heart of God in the New Testament, is it not? Like, I think of Peter, right? So, who's always stumbling and bumbling. He's like, I love him as an apostle because he makes me feel better about myself sometimes. Because he's always like, oh, yeah, talks a big game, and then he withers away. Like, at the end of his life, what does he do with Jesus? He denies him three times, right? And what does God do? Oh, you messed up. I'm out. You're off the team. You're no longer my guy. Like, after the resurrection, when he has that really wonderful moment on the shores of Galilee with Peter, what does he do? He asks him, you know, do you love me three times? He restores him. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. But after every time that Peter says, you know I love you, you know I love you, like he's brokenhearted that he betrayed the Lord, and yet the Lord doesn't walk away from him, what does he say every time when Peter says, you know I love you?
Feed my sheep.
Feed my sheep. What is he doing with Abraham here? Oh. Hey, at your worst, you've denied me many times. You've stumbled. You've bumbled. You're still my guy. Like, I'm going to take you out of all of your errors and all of your messes, and I'm going to show you that my faithfulness to you doesn't depend on your perfection.
Yeah.
I love you, and I've called you, and you're my guy, and I'm going to restore you. And why am I restoring you, Abraham? Enter into covenant with your neighbors. Go care for them. Why am I restoring you, Peter? One, because I love you in your mind, but two, go feed my sheep. Take care of my flock. Pray for them. It's the same God. Why does he come to you and rescue you from our lowest and our scandals and our mess and how we're so unworthy and prove ourselves unworthy again and again of his love, and yet he keeps chasing us to the very bottom pits of hell to redeem us? And then when we recognize in those moments, like, you still would love me, you still want me, you're still wild about me, you still think I'm on your team, you'd still call me a prophet or a pastor or a Christian, you bet.
Yes.
Because he's that good. And then when he redeems you and restores you, what is he restoring you to? Now go love them as I've loved you.
Yeah.
We talked about that last night in your sermon. Go love as I've loved you. That's the last command that Jesus gives before his crucifixion. You are to love, not as you want to be loved. Hmm. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. Like, no, there's a higher standard now. You go love as I have loved you. And if you're Abraham and that's the standard, it means, holy smokes. That means I got to love people through a lot of pitfalls. I've got to show faithfulness when they don't deserve it. I've got to protect people that are vulnerable. Like, that's a beautiful kind of love. And God's like, that's what I'm rescuing you to do with your life. Amen?
Amen.
It's pretty beautiful. There's so much gospel in the Old Testament story of Abraham. It really is profound. But we're going to leave it there. I want to thank you so much for watching. Join us next time. We're probably the climax of the story of Abraham, where God's going to ask him to sacrifice his son Isaac. And it's like, what in the world is this God doing? Like, we get all the fingers pointing at heaven on this one. But when you see what God is up to, it is stunningly beautiful. And it will bless your soul. Join us next week. God bless. Thanks for listening to The Bible Show. If you enjoyed this podcast, please remember to like and subscribe and leave a kind review to help us in the world of tech algorithms. Also, feel free to share with a friend. We'll see you next week with another episode of The Bible Show.